Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trad Tasman Talk for another week on this Friday, the 11th of September, 2020. It is 6 p.m. here in lockdown Melbourne.
And it is 8 p.m. here in sort of mostly lockdown Auckland.
Yes, we found out last Sunday the very slow roadmap out of lockdown here in Victoria to recovery. And when I say slow, I mean very slow. It's basically not a suppression strategy, it's an elimination strategy. We can't go to COVID normal, which is, I guess, in New Zealand terms, alert level one, until the virus has been eliminated for over a month. That's basically it.
Wow.
But it's not an elimination strategy.
Oh, yeah, of course not. We're just flattening the curve, right?
Yes, just a few more weeks and we'll have flattened it completely, which is, I just want to share with you some of the memes that have been floating around Facebook, because, of course, that's the only place on the internet where you're allowed to exercise your democratic rights and freedoms. There was quite a lot of despair when Stage 4 was first introduced, and we peaked at around 700 daily cases. If we have a look at today, we're down to 43. We're down to 1,336 active cases. The highest it got was around 7,800. We're still getting roughly 10 deaths per day, but most of those are linked to aged care. But it'd be good if people stop dying from coronavirus in those facilities, although we don't know if they're dying of coronavirus or with coronavirus, since it's pretty consistent. We are getting 10 a day, though the active cases in aged care are declining. Testing is still pretty stable, 13,000. And 43 new cases. Our 14-day average for Melbourne Metro is 65, and for regional Victoria, it is under 5. And there's hope. You shouldn't be too optimistic at this stage that regional Victoria can skip a few steps and open up as their cafes and restaurants and pubs. Though there was concern today of a mystery case in the rural border town of Echuca in northern Victoria, but it turned out to be a false positive.
you'd think that, for instance, the South Island or other parts of New Zealand would be allowed to operate normally, but that is not the case. So I don't, again, like you said, the slim hope of the government letting go of its grasp on restrictions is not very high at this point. The chat is already saying, already two or three swigs of gin in on the first 2 minutes of the show, which is about right for the for Tim's opening statements. So cheers to that, and make sure you've got your drinks in for tonight. Yes, it's the cases for New Zealand are not much to report. We had a day of six. One case today. It's pretty much as it has been. Fairly non-existent, at least compared to Australia's cases, especially Victoria's cases, where basically nothing.
Yeah. Victoria is basically where most of the active and new cases are. New South Wales and Queensland average round about 10 per day, sometimes less. New South Wales has been talked about as the gold standard in testing, tracing and containment. They basically have got a COVID normal there where the state is open, but you're still not allowed to protest in New South Wales because they had their own Freedom Day last Saturday, which was shut down by the New South Wales police. There were arrests, people fined because they considered all the people who were in the protest area part of the one gathering. So obviously it was way more than 20 people. You can watch Carnage House Productions vlog on it to see how it went down. But it was sort of like talked a lot about Victoria Police these past couple of weeks, but sort of New South Wales Police last week was sort of like, hey, remember us?
Oof. And I suppose most people have seen the videos of Avi Yemeni getting arrested as well, and various videos of
He wasn't arrested. He was detained. Detained, and so was a Herald Sun photographer and a Channel 9 security guard there. They threatened to arrest Channel 7's Paul Dowsley, which. It was actually captured by Avi Yemeni's cameras. Paul Dowsley didn't report this himself.
But there's nothing wrong there. If your cops are arresting journalists, there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. This is what normal looks like.
Oh, well, apparently it was really outrageous that China knocked on the door at midnight of two of Australia's journalists over there. They were escorted out of the country by Australian authorities. Later that night, Avi Yemeni got visited by the police on the Saturday evening for covering the protest. So it's sort of like, are we really much different from China?
Exactly. It's what I was talking about last week a little bit. You know, other than maybe being able to criticize the government online, you know, you're better off at the pool parties in Wuhan. We're well and truly into the show, I suppose, but it's not too late to remind everyone that we will try and end the show with 15 minutes of Q&A, so you can drop your questions into the Entropy link that you'll find in both the Right Minds channel and the Unshackled channel. And hello to everyone else who has filtered in the last few minutes. We'll deal with those questions and super chats at the end if you drop them through, and if there's anything else you think we need to discuss, drop it in the show, in the chat, and we'll get to it if we can. It is, of course, today, September the 11th, or 9/11 in the United States, and it's actually not something that was mentioned in the media at all today in New Zealand.
It has been a little bit in Australia, but of course there are two 9/11s. The first one is the 1973 Chilean coup d'etat, where Auguste Pinochet saved the people of Chile from destitute socialism, implemented free market reforms, made sure the communist threat was eliminated, and set Chile on the path that eventually went back to democracy, one of the freest and richest nations in Latin America. Yep. But there's also, obviously, September 11, 2001, which I guess was the beginning of trading liberty for security.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, definitely the proof that the government power doesn't go away. You know, you're still shuffling barefoot through the airports nearly 20 years on.
Yeah.
Still in the orange alert for terrorism, much like we're in the permanent orange alert for coronavirus.
Yes, because
as well.
We've got the traffic light system now for... Oh, in Australia, we also have the traffic light system for bushfire alerts. Well, obviously, we've seen the wildfires in California. At the moment, they've now spread to Washington State and Oregon, with the orange skies that we saw during Australia's Black Summer. I also came up with my own traffic light system, a triggering alert system in case that there was the risk of hate speech.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, absolutely.
Because that was basically the battle of the second decade of the 21st century to make sure that there was no offense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, after we've had nearly two decades of endless wars that seem to finally be wrapping up. In fact, Trump pulled back another 3,000 troops from Afghanistan, I believe. You know, but now that that's coming to an end, it seems like we're the alert system is moving into the next endless war, but now it's germ warfare. So we're going to have that to deal with for the next two decades.
I remember the late John McCain. He wanted US troops to remain permanently in Iraq when he was running in 2008. His justification was, well, we've still got troops in South Korea and
Japan.
So what's the big deal? Like, just have them there like we have there. And of course, the Afghanistan war, just a few more years and we'll definitely have built the nation.
That's right. And here we are, no luck at all. And it reminds me as well of one of the similar senators who called for boots on the ground in Chad or something. And he said, oh, there was some insurrection in Chad. He said, oh, we need boots on the ground in Chad. And one of the reporters had to announce, had to tell him, well, sir, actually, we do have troops stationed in Chad. So the problem is the US senators don't even know where they keep their troops.
I was about to go to these memes about Victoria, because when the situation looked completely hopeless, it still seems there's still a lot of hopelessness in Victoria. But we thought that the stages were going to increase, and this was a meme: stage 129, Victorians urged to remain in bed. But the good news is that we're not going to a further stage now. Starting next Monday, we're going to not to from stage 4 lockdown to basically stage 3.9, where the curfew is going to be lifted from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. So you're allowed out for an extra hour. You're allowed 2 hours of exercise now, or social interaction. So you can meet up with one other person
Ooh, nice.
to chat.
Thank you,
So the
government.
footage that we've seen of police harassing two people sitting on a park bench and telling them to move on, that will be lawful next week. They even told Victoria Police a pregnant woman this week. It seems to be they've got to target at least one pregnant woman each week,
Oh,
that
yeah.
she couldn't sit
Gotta
down
get
on a
quotas.
park bench because she wouldn't be exercising then.
I'll drink to that.
So there's still, and also the you'd be familiar with this this term bubble. For those
Yes.
living alone or with single parents, you're allowed to have a bubble buddy, as it's called.
Okay.
So they're allowed to visit you, but at the moment, it says that if you're visiting your bubble buddy, you have to wear a mask inside the house. And the chief health officer was asked about this, Dr. Brett Sutton, and he indicated this might change because it's not practical. It was interesting that it was obviously written by some bureaucrat, and he was sort of like,
Obviously.
yeah, and he's the chief health officer, and said, yeah, that doesn't seem practical. And Dan Andrews was asked about it himself, and it sort of, he was the one who tried to justify it, because intimate partners, they can, they've always been able to see each other. They don't have to wear masks when they're staying at each other's place. And he tried to say, obviously, a platonic relationship is different from an intimate partner.
Oh, it never ends with these people, does
Yeah, the micromanagement,
it?
the specific rules,
Yeah.
depending on it's the ultimate nanny state.
Absolutely, that's right. And in New Zealand, we've been sort of the government is sort of putting off the announcements again. We're looking at okay, when are we going back down to a proper level two? When are we going back down to a proper level one? And the case numbers are having to say, well, if we have a few more cases here, we have to extend it. So everybody's got to behave. And due to the most recent part of the cluster in Auckland being an outbreak at a church, the Mount Roskill Evangelical Fellowship. They have basically been, the media has been engaged in extensive Christian bashing and running articles and even going to the extent of harassing individuals connected to this church. And the Ministry of Health has actually had to release or in a press release, had to dedicate several paragraphs to asking the media not to harass people. So I'll read out
Is this the
couple of
one that you've linked me to here?
The Ministry of Health one, health.gov.nz. You could bring it up on the screen if you like,
Yep.
while I read it out. But further down here, let's see, one, two, three, four, five paragraphs down. We ask that the privacy of the people who are part of the fellowship be respected. The ministry has received reports of people associated with the Mount Roskill Evangelical Fellowship being pursued by media. This is creating stress and crucially hindering public health work as these people are becoming reluctant to answer their phones. It is also creating a sense of stigma, which again is unhelpful for public health efforts. We need people to be forthcoming and cooperative with testing and contact tracing. So the media is basically beginning a witch hunt now against segments of the population affected by this. And it should be noted that the number of cases that have come from this church have been a minority of the cases from the most recent cluster, and most of them actually came from a funeral and a wedding as well that took place back before the lockdown started. So they just happened to be closely related there. And obviously this has resulted in the media going on a bit of a hunt to figure out if they could figure out how to connect Trump to this, of course, because every story in New Zealand has to end with Orange Man bad. So they were looking for an American connection, and they started to say that these Pacific Island Christians were being influenced by American evangelicals, and even John MacArthur was mentioned once and saying that they were being falsely influenced and believing misinformation and not taking the science as seriously as they should. So essentially anybody who is anybody who's questioning the official response, which apparently also includes the scientists that are part of the Plan B group in Auckland and throughout New Zealand, or possibly even Sweden or other countries that are doing things differently, they are engaging in dangerous misinformation. And that is the line that is being taken even by Chris Hipkins, who is the health minister. And we need to remember that his predecessor was actually fired for his various failings in
upholding his own rules. Oh, no, he retired, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, sorry. That's right, his early retirement due to his inability to follow his own rules. And, of course, then Chris Hipkins himself, talking about being the one source of truth, came out and said that he was he really struggled to get information out of these church people. So he said, these basically Christians bad, church people aren't cooperating, they aren't telling us about their close contacts, and he went out and he defamed them all over the media. And then a few hours later, the Director General of Health had to get out on the podium and say, the most recent cases were actually not close contacts of the church congregation. Hey, sorry guys, we got that wrong. Right after, obviously, they've gone out and done the damage and created this narrative against, the people that they don't like, of course.
And your media is still at the stage of demonizing all the people they believe are spreading so-called misinformation and COVID idiots. Has that been in the media?
They haven't been referring to COVID idiots in the media, but I've got two lines of that going on here. One, you've got the media questioning the health minister, and I think I've sent you the video to play.
Yes, I've got the video here.
A journalist asks him about what we can do to deal with these terrible people who spread misinformation.
Taking a punitive approach with people sharing the misinformation.
Look, that's much more difficult, I guess all New Zealanders can play a leadership role here in just not sharing that misinformation.
In criminal offences, though, to the best of your knowledge, that law enforcement agencies could look to apply or charge people for in those cases where you've got recidivist offenders potentially who are repeatedly sharing misinformation?
Look, that's not something that that I have looked at. It is something that we may look at if it continues to go on and it continues to become more and more of a problem. My message to all New Zealanders is, though, we can give the misinformation nowhere to go, just as we're giving the virus nowhere to go. If people don't stand for it, they don't tolerate it, they don't share it, then actually that's the best safeguard that we could possibly have.
So who was that journalist who asked about recidivist misinformation offenders? What the hell is that?
That people who if you share the wrong, like if you get these warnings on Facebook and you first get like a 3-day ban and then you get a 7-day ban and then like a 30-day ban. So I think she's kind of talking about that, but for real life.
So you'll get, instead of being zucked, you'll get jacinted.
Yeah, also, I'm sure we'll eventually come up with a better name. And notice how he didn't rule out. He didn't say, no, hey, everyone, we have freedom. We have the inalienable right to, from the Bill of Rights to receive and partake and disseminate information of any kind. It's in the Bill of Rights. We're definitely not going to be doing anything there. No, it's, we'll see. If everybody behaves, we'll be okay. But if you naughty people keep sharing, that information on Facebook, then we're going to have to find some way to deal with this and come up with punitive measures to punish people who share the wrong kind of information.
Which has been the Dan Andrews approach, the punitive approach, when we were being softened up for the second lockdown. It's like, I don't want to have to lock everyone up. I want everyone to do the right thing. But I will do this if I have to. This is always been his become fixated on, well, basically, eliminating the virus through lockdown measures, and he's claimed that obviously the lockdown is working because we're now at a tenth of the figures that we are, but it's been exposed how poor Victoria's contact tracing system is. It wasn't even digitalized. They were using post-it notes and fax machines. They're on a fact-finding mission now, the Victorian Department of Health and Human Services to New South Wales, to see how they do it, because obviously New South Wales, they're containing the virus due to their good contact tracing. Dan Andrews saying that basically eliminating the virus is the only way because he doesn't have faith in his contact tracers or the health system. He claims that if we open up now, even though the daily cases are getting lower and lower, then cases will explode. Our hospital system will be overwhelmed. Though it was revealed this week that the Royal Melbourne Hospital Scrub Choir were able to choreograph a musical performance of "I'll Stand By You" by the Pretenders. Clearly, so overwhelmed that they were able to produce this video.
Absolutely. And the second line of sort of government questioning or sort of the punitive approach here is that we have first we dealt with the punitive measures, but before they go into punitive, they have decided to just go with insulting. So the Auckland mayor Phil Goff.
Is he the one that banned Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux?
That one. In fact, many years ago, he was one of the people who threw red paint on returning veterans from the Vietnam War. So he's got a bit of a history.
This is him here with his incorrect mask on.
That's the link that I sent you there. Yeah. And he... if you're a skeptic of COVID-19, then you are you have low IQ. So this is people who don't believe the right thing are dumb.
Yeah, because we saw Jacinta's mask this week. What is it with New Zealand masks looking like people are wearing their undies on their face?
Yes, and in this particular case, he's not even wearing his undies in the appropriately officially mandated way, because if he did have a high IQ, he would know that he's supposed to cover his nose as well. So it's a bit of an unfortunate...
Which means the mask is useless.
See, here's something in the chat here, by the way, says that Phil Goff actually threw paint on the uncle of one of our moderators here. So that's our Auckland mayor goes history goes way back as a... somebody who at least
a moron
is a more well, that's a nice way of putting it. Thank you.
Going back,
and,
to...
oh, by the way, he also, I just want to say, he was also the guy when he banned Lauren Southern and Stefan Molyneux. He said it was because he because they said because Stefan Molyneux said that your race determines your IQ is one of the reasons why he wanted to ban him, but now apparently he's engaging in a little bit of IQ theory.
I've got a super chat here from Senator Slayer for $3 Australian dollars. He said, Tim, are you still able to visit your girlfriend during the lockdown? Dan Andrews just hates heterosexuals. Well, intimate partner, as it's described on the DHS website, it applies to both heterosexual relationship and homosexual relationships. That's why the term partner is used. So I hope that answers that for you, Senator Slayer. But
One last thing here on this particular topic here of the scapegoating of Christians is that the latest story I just noticed on the New Zealand Herald, they had like a red breaking news story while I clicked on that Phil Goff one, and did a spotlight article, Mount Roskill Church thrust into spotlight by COVID outbreak. And then a massive study where they come up with these revelations, like the fact that Christians actually believe what the Bible says, and they're shocked to find out that these people, take the Bible seriously and, believe word for word that it's actually the word of God, and that they, for instance, that they tithe from their income to give to the church, and all of that stuff, is incredibly concerning. And they've written a very detailed article on these wonderful new discoveries that they have just made about Christianity.
Yeah, it sounds like they're channeling Richard Dawkins there.
Yeah, basically. Imagine the entire media made up of Richard Dawkins. Basically, it's just an entire... It's like screeching new atheists. That's what it's been for the past week. Yeah.
Now, going back to Victoria, where under this state of disaster running concurrently with the state of emergency, we've had for the past 6 weeks 8 p.m. nightly curfew. Daniel Andrews has said that he always follows the best medical advice. You can't argue with science. He said that the modelling based on his slow roadmap out of lockdown was through a supercomputer. Even though the very next day, he announced it last Sunday on the Monday, several epidemiologists questioned the modelling.
Yeah, but they're not AI, are they? AI is infallible.
Yeah, it's a bit harder though for Daniel Andrews to say to them, I don't care what they say, I'm just focused on this, because it's easy for him to say, I don't care what Sam Newman or Jeff Kennett say. He was asked about Tim Wilson today, saying that the curfew is against human rights. He once again said, it's not about human rights, this is about human life. It's not about quality of human life, it's about human life.
No, that's right, and it's not about people actually being able to live their lives, but it's about basically him keeping you alive in a pod. It's like the pod people that we were joking about earlier on in the year have come to life. We're permanent pod people now, and they will forever keep you alive in your pod. Well, your box.
So we had the chief health officer, Dr. Brett Sutton. He appeared on 3AW with Neil Mitchell on Tuesday and said that the curfew was not something that he recommended. He said he wasn't opposed to it, but it's not something that he recommended. So Daniel Andrews was then asked, why did you implement it then? And he said, oh, it's to help.
Because I'm a communist?
No.
Oh, sorry.
I'll get to that. Conclusion at the end.
Carry on.
Yeah, he said it's to help police enforce the lockdown rules. But then the police commissioner, Shane Patton, was on Neil Mitchell's program on Thursday, and he said, no, Victoria Police didn't advise it, nor were they consulted on it. We found out 2 hours before it was announced. And so Daniel Andrews was asked again, and he said, oh, I can't remember where the idea came from. It just... This is the thing. He also still can't remember who decided to use security guards for hotel quarantine, because that inquiry is still ongoing, revealing more chaos and incompetence. And yeah, it's basically because he knows what's good for us. It's been described as a captain's call. It's more a dictatorial decree.
Yep.
And
on the carry on.
Yeah, and Dan Andrews has repeatedly said that he's not interested in politics at this time at all. This is not about being popular. Yeah, no shit. But polling was leaked to the Herald Sun. It was commissioned by the Liberal Party, but it's a proper statistical sample. It's not one of those internet polls. Yeah. Because obviously what kept Dan going on keeping this lockdown going is the I Stand With Dan people who they at the moment they can never have too much lockdown. They excuse all of the growing examples of police overreach, all the restrictions on people working, but I'll just bring it up here, this poll from the Herald Sun. So this is the five marginal seats from the last election which Labor won, Bayswater, Hawthorne, Mulbock, Mount Waverley and South Barwon. They calculated a 14% swing against the ALP that if it was replicated in an election, we haven't got another election for 2 years, until the Labor Party would lose 30 seats. They've got 55 out of 88 seats, so they'd lose 30 seats there. And Dan Andrews might not care about that, but certainly his Labor caucus, they would be incredibly spooked by that. And there's a lot of a speculation about whether he will survive until year's end. There was a rumor last night that Treasurer Tim Pallas was planning a challenge, but that was just a Facebook rumor. It didn't eventuate. This is another thing that people are hoping. Just a few more weeks of dictator despot Dan and he'll be gone. That's sort of the new hope. Yep. It's either going to be... There's three options now that either the virus is eliminated, there's a vaccine, or dictator Dan is removed by his caucus.
The third one is far more likely than the other two.
Yeah.
I think at this point, it's certainly the case. Yeah. Well, you can hope. It's the only thing you can really hope for at the moment, I suppose. But since we're on the overall topic of communists, I suppose we may as well carry on. If you're done with dictator Dan, we could move
Comrade Jacinta.
Comrade Jacinta. No, we're going to go to the OG dictator, Xi Jinping. We have a little bit of controversy in New Zealand here around the new Mulan film.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, so the Mulan film, which was mostly filmed in New Zealand, was also filmed in the name of the province that I will...
Xinjiang.
Xinjiang, yes. So Xinjiang province is where they shot that part of the film, but that is where the internment camps for the Uyghur Muslims are, which are of course an ethnic and religious population, a minority population in conquered by to be part of China a long time ago. But the suppression and re-education that is going on is in that province, and they even thanked the police force. Well, I say police forces, basically the prison guards, the camp guards, the people who do the rounding up and organ harvesting. They were actually thanked in the closing credits of Mulan. I see here that's named the Turpan Public Security Bureau. Was thanked directly in the credits of this movie. And obviously people are rightly decrying this connection here. And we know, and this is something we've discussed on the show in the past, was sort of the connection and funding, even New Zealand government film funding Chinese propaganda films as well. So this is certainly, nice and tight connections with the Chinese Communist Party here.
Which I already alluded to, the further breakdown of Australia-Chinese relations with those two Australian journalists being rushed out and Australian intelligence, ASIO and the Australian Federal Police retaliated by arresting two Chinese journalists in Australia and two academics, and then China came out and accused Australia of hypocrisy, which is sort of an effective thing, but obviously I'm not sure what things are like in New Zealand, because, well, you were as we've already established on Trad Tasman Talk, it was sort of a competition between whether Victoria or New Zealand was the latest province of the People's Republic.
Yeah. Well, we shall continue to find out. We'll leave the jury to deliberate on that for a little bit longer. I may as well move on to the next slightly communist related topic then, as you pointed to Comrade Jacinda. She has announced, and this is an election thing, obviously, the election now is just a few more weeks away. If it doesn't get moved again, just like everything else seems to get moved down, who knows? But if the election date is set, election will be in 5 weeks. So Jacinda has finally announced some policy, which is that there's going to be a new tax rate of 39% on those earning over $180,000. This has actually severely disappointed most of the left wing, and in fact, probably we may need to revoke her title of Comrade Jacinda for doing this, because they wanted, you know, better taxes on rich people, and the only people who earn over $180,000 in New Zealand are, well, that's less than 2% of taxpayers, and these are largely people who can shift funds around to avoid it. So it's largely a token tax on which very little of it will likely be paid. The projected income of it is about $500 million, which is very much short of the 60-odd billion to $100 billion that have been borrowed for the coronavirus pandemic. That is, that's the tax policy that's been announced. The National Party, on the other hand, has promised no extra taxes, but they have promised a lot more spending. They're promising various infrastructure funds, and so nothing too exciting there from the opposition, just promising they can spend more and better than the Labour Party, so nothing exciting there. And then the Labour Party's best policy this week has been they've announced that there's going to be a new public holiday starting in 2022. So that's how we're going to recover from this mess. We're going to have an extra public holiday, Matariki.
That?
Or Matariki, if you want to be Australian. That is considered to be the Maori New Year, but it basically is marked by the rising of the Pleiades star cluster, and it's the Maori name for that cluster. So I think Pleiades or Pleiades, I'm not sure what we say in English. I've realized I've never had to say it out loud.
Well, when the Andrews government was first elected here in Victoria in 2014, they promised a grand final eve public holiday. And of course, it's not taking place in Melbourne this year because of the second wave. It's in Brisbane at the Gabba on October 24th. But we're still going to have a public holiday on October 23rd. It's going to be called a thank you day. I'm not sure if it's the government thanking Victorians for helping to defeat the second wave or thanking our dear leader, Dan, for taking care of us.
It'll be North Korea. It'll be thank you to Kim Jong-un, who we don't know if he's still alive. It'll be like one of those special days. Make sure you clap extra loud, Tim. You don't want to be the first one to stop clapping.
Exactly.
The chat has just told me, by the way, that Pleiades is Greek. Yes, I know that. I'm trying to figure out the English pronunciation. I suppose if I've got it in Greek, that's fine. I'll just pretend like I did that on purpose.
Now, obviously, you saw, and most of the audience saw, Victoria Police doing their best last week to suppress attendance last Saturday's anti-lockdown protest. They charged five people with incitement, including pregnant Ballarat woman, Zoe Bueller. Two of those arrested for incitement, Fanos Panias and Anthony Kalouf, they had gag orders on them until after the Saturday protest. So they're back making vlogs on Facebook.
Are they discouraging people from attending the march tomorrow?
Well, yes, because obviously that's incitement as well. Victoria Police have only made one incitement in the lead up to this weekend, and we wonder whether we were going to hear from him again this week. Assistant Commissioner Luke Cornelius, who is referred to as Chief Wiggum.
I remember Chief Wiggum from last week.
Yeah, so he was back up again, warning people not to go. And
don't make me do this again.
And of course, as he said last week, be the keyboard warrior, fat shame me all you like, but do it from home. Don't go to protests. But it seems that this week, because he's been called all sorts of names online. XYZ had the headline that Luke Fatty Cornelius scoffs 57 donuts after his press conference. I think he did a preemptive self-insult this week. This is what how he responded to a journalist today.
How frustrated are you that you have to be standing here again sending the same message to the same people?
Look, to be honest, I feel a bit like a dog returning to eat his own vomit. I mean, it's just none of us would want to do that, and I'm sick of it, really. It goes without saying, yes, it's incredibly frustrating. And if people were less selfish and a bit more grown up, we wouldn't have to keep doing this. Please stop leaving home to protest.
So he referred to himself as a dog who last week spewed vomit, and he's back to eat the vomit and spew it back up again.
And yeah, I think the Bible has something to say about those people.
So I'll go to the full news.com.au report. So this is what Mr. Cornelius said. He had no issues with keyboard warriors who were creative in venting their frustrations about the strict regulations. Creative in terms of insults against him, or I'm not sure, as long as they didn't promote public demonstrations. He said that he too longed for the day when curfews and lockdowns were lifted, but that needs to happen when it was safe to do so. Bring on the day, I say, but please, please don't leave home to engage in an activity that can spread this deadly virus and keep us locked up longer, he said. This was him going up to the podium with he had a black cloth mask on last week. This week he's got the surgical one.
Look, your officials can wear them properly. Well, that's something. I suppose they've had a few extra weeks of practice. And of course, are there predictions around how many are likely to attend? I mean, based on numbers I saw, there were probably hundreds last week. We've got our own Liberty March protests in Auckland that have been going on the past few weeks. I reckon they had between 800 and 1,400 last week. And so, with at least 1,000 last week, I suspect that number is going to go up in New Zealand. There actually haven't been any direct references to it by New Zealand officials at all, other than just telling people, well, if people misbehave, we're going to extend the lockdown, naughty, naughty people.
Yeah, which is always the threat.
Yeah, and if anything, I suspect we'll make more people turn up, but we will see.
And also, the Melbourne press pack, as I said, they've been doing their job better. It's been reported this week that mobile surveillance vans are being rolled out to public parks to make sure that people are properly exercising and socially distancing. And Liberty Victoria, one of the civil liberties group have spoken out about this, except their actual president, Julian Burnside, QC, former candidate from the Greens, who said, well, in a pandemic, it's important to suspend civil liberties.
Yeah, that's right.
Just like it was after 9/11.
Exactly. It's fine. It's just until we flatten the curve, guys. We'll be fine.
Obviously, Dictator Dan Andrews is awful, but Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk could be worse with her hard and, cruel border closure with New South Wales. The hard border has already led to the death of an unborn child. There were two heartless and cruel decisions made yesterday that a woman who, well, all her family was in Brisbane. She left to earlier this year to go go work in Canberra to manage a Hungry Jack's. Her father was terminally ill. She wanted to see him before he died. The entry permit came after 20 days. He'd already died. She wasn't granted an exemption to go to the funeral, but she was allowed a private viewing afterwards in a full hazmat suit. And this was the front of Queensland's Courier Mail. Now that's a cluster. So that's how she had to, she was all alone and she had to be dressed up like that. And the Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister, obviously begged Anastasia Palaszczuk, you know, show some compassion, let her attend the funeral. And Anastasia Palaszczuk said she was being bullied. It's not her decision. She said she relies on the medical advice. And also there's a terminally ill father in Brisbane. The mother and the four children live in New South Wales. Only one of the children was going to be allowed to see him. So basically a Sophie's choice. One of his four children were only going to be allowed to see him. They relented late last night, and so now all four are allowed to go, but they've been hit with a $16,000 quarantine bill. This is the father and the four children there. So a GoFundMe was set up last night, and it raised $200,000 for a family hit with huge quarantine bill to visit a dying father. And even the Prime Minister chipped in $1,000 of his own money there. But I suppose
a good story.
Yeah, but I suppose I think he only donated that $1,000 to bully Anastasia Palaszczuk, because she tried to claim that she was the victim. She said, "I won't be bullied and intimidated," and of course, I mentioned
into being a decent human being.
Yeah. Well, Anastasia Palaszczuk has no children of her own. She passed the buck to her chief health officer, Dr. Jeanette Young, who is much, much worse than, we don't even know whether Victoria's chief officer, Dr. Brett Sutton, is a good or a bad person, because he seems nice. Obviously, Daniel Andrews is the bastard here. We don't know, because as it's revealed today that Brett Sutton, he was denied a request to be in charge of the coronavirus emergency response. But Dr. Jeanette Young, we talked last week about how the AFL, 400 AFL officials were allowed to a quarantine in a resort hub, and she defended that. Now she's let back in Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson so they can resume filming for Baz Luhrmann's biopic on the Gold Coast. And obviously she was asked, Jeanette Young, how come these rich people got special treatment while these ordinary people receive no compassion? And with the Canberra daughter, Canberra's had no COVID cases for 60 days now. And this was Dr. Jeanette Young's response here.
I've given exemptions for people in entertainment and film because that's bringing a lot of money into this state. And can I say, we need every single dollar. And if it's safe, then I look at how it can be done. And whether that's the AFL, the NRL, whether it's swimming, tennis, all of the sports, cricket.
So basically, if the price is right, Dr. Jeanette Young will grant you an entry permit exemption. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's suddenly it's all about the money, of course.
Yeah, and she's no longer acting on medical advice.
No. If you're important enough, yeah.
Yeah, so she's also a chief economics officer as well.
Wow. Surprise. Mm. Obviously these people, they don't have to suffer the consequences of their choices. It's just the little people. Yeah.
Yes. But as I mentioned, the state of New South Wales has got that COVID normal. So they're still semi-open. You're not under the house arrest, but you also don't have to wear a mask in New South Wales as well. But they are containing outbreaks. So it's so COVID normal there that the government nearly blew up the coalition between the Liberal and National parties yesterday. Nationals leader and Deputy Premier John Barilaro said that he and his party would go to the crossbench over a koala sanctuary protection bill, which they said would be an infringement on rural property rights. And basically, the
Somebody think of the koalas.
Yeah, Premier Gladys Berejiklian, she called their bluff and said, "If you're going to do that, I expect your resignations by 9 a.m. Tomorrow morning, and I'll swear in a new ministry." By today, everything was good again. The Nationals claimed, "Oh yeah, the matter's going to be reconsidered at a future cabinet meeting." Yeah, we all get on well now.
Well, what koalas?
You sort of envy that sort of when that was the worst political chaos was just a potential breakdown in a coalition or a spill, not that government incompetence would lead to hundreds dead and you being locked in your home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we should also mention that, Melbourne and Auckland are now not alone in going back into lockdown. It seems that the people of the UK are being softened up for a second lockdown because a second wave is coming. And of course, the second lockdown is always worse than the original, because in Melbourne's first lockdown, there was no curfew, you didn't have to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in this stage four lockdown.
Has anybody noticed how suddenly everything gets a little bit tightened up the second time around?
Gatherings in the UK they're going to be cut from 30 to 6 from Monday.
That's a good number.
Indoor and outdoor. Why is it a good number?
It's very fitting. 6 is a very fitting number. That's it's biblically symbolic for the number of man. So it's the sort of the opposite of the number of God, which is 7. 6 is sort of the completeness, the completeness of the man's devices. So that's what's. Hey.
And they've also got a mask mandate now that's being brought in. City of Bolton is now in lockdown due to a spike, and City of Leicester, that was the first to go back into lockdown. And now cities in the UK, they're going to get what are they called,
street marshals,
COVID street marshals. They're called street rangers, which they're not police officers, but they're there to advise and encourage people to socially distance, abide by the rules. And you just sort of, because in the Northern Hemisphere it's autumn, they're going into winter, you just sort of feel that they're being softened up for a full second lockdown.
Absolutely, you can see that one coming. And I'm sure we'll have more on that in a few weeks. Before we wrap up the show, we'll take some questions, and I see
we should also mention as about the UK. Obviously, the Oxford vaccine, a person suffered an adverse reaction. So we don't know. Some outlets have reported it's been halted or suspended, but our Australian government, which secured 84 million doses free and voluntary of this vaccine, said, no, it won't interrupt the timeline. We expect it to start to be rolled out from January.
You'll be first in line, right, Tim?
Yes.
Oh well, all right. I'll take one of the first questions, and if we've got anything else, we'll go. You can send super chats as well to the link that I've been posting throughout the show, and Tim has been on posting it on the Unshackled channel as well. First question we've got here from Savage Nobles and Mary Peasants, host on ZB, which is a New Zealand talk radio, last night saying they should lock up the church leaders. I wonder if he'd extend that to the BLM march organizers for organizing about 4,000 people in level 4. I believe the BLM march managed to just fall into level 3. Not that it makes much difference, but the difference was something like between 0 and 10 in terms of what was allowed. But this is actually something that, while the media has been blaming church leaders for whatever, there have been no cases, outbreaks linked to anything that the church itself has done, or that the church leaders have done. Any of the supposed misinformation, again, not linked to any of these church leaders. So the people who are talking about, you know, locking up church leaders have basically been a hate mob that have been ginned up by these new atheists with low IQ, who run the mainstream media in New Zealand. So it's sort of a fantasy that they will talk about, but there's actually no evidence for anything that they're claiming that these church leaders have done. So it is fake news and misinformation. That's what it is.
Locking up church leaders, it sounds very communist.
Yeah, I know. It's what we're at in New Zealand. And it is, you know, it's not the government talking about this. It's the people who ring in, the people who vote, who are talking about locking up church leaders. So you know where that's going to go.
Which is obviously, as you know, Comrade Jacinta is bad. It's pretty bad. So is Dictator Dan here. But the I Stand With Dan people are even worse. They want all dissent crushed.
Yeah, and it's the lockdown lovies, as you like to call them. They're the ones who are obviously advocating for this. Anybody who dissents against lockdown needs to go off to the camps. Yeah. I can move straight into the second question quickly, since we haven't got anything else. From Tani Newton, question for discussion. Has the rhetoric of anthropogenic climate change over the last 20 years made us more likely to accept the narrative of anthropogenic pandemic change? Well, good question, I suppose. I have to think about that.
If it is over, this this pandemic, because the only solution to, well, as I call it, the lockdown road loop, where it's just going to be in and out, we might be locked down every winter, is a vaccine. Now, the Oxford one is the vaccine that's got the most attention. That's one of 9 potential vaccines that's in stage 3 clinical trials. There's 170 in total. But is there going to be any reflection about what to do in a future pandemic, or is there going to be any reflection, or is just going to be just lock it all down again?
I remember Bill Gates talking about this. He said when pandemic 2 happens, but I can't remember what he was describing we should do or how ready we would be for it. But I do know that Bill Gates and his wonderful charm managed to tell people that pandemic 2 was going to come after pandemic 1. So he doesn't seem to have any luck in not turning people into conspiracy theorists. I think in many ways, obviously, what's happened with global warming, climate change, is the government is the solution to the existential crisis. Every threat threatens the world. So the entire world is in danger. The world is going to be destroyed. And who's going to save the world? Who is going to be, you know, what is the sort of the messianic structure that is in place? And that is the government. So more power, more money up the top of the triangle, up the top of the pyramid, into the government, into the halls of power, and right up to the top. That's the solution to climate change. That's the solution to the coronavirus problem. So that's the solution to whatever the problem is. And that's certainly what the narrative has been, especially around, you know, any issue that's come up in the last few decades. And I suspect a historical cycle as well, where somebody promises to be the savior and to cure the problems, to save the world. And that's where we're headed, I suppose. You know, decrease in faith, decrease in religiousness. And we've been talking a lot about churches in this show. Decrease of the churches, you will see an increase in the government, increase in the worship of the state. And that's probably the best way to look at this.
Got another super chat from Senator Slayer for $3. Thank you for both the super chats, Senator Slayer. Andy Nolch is a political prisoner. Do you agree? Nolch should paint a picture of Daniel Andrews again. Do you know who Andy Nolch is?
No.
He's the guy who vandalized Eurydice Dixon, who was a young comedian who was raped and murdered. Her memorial in Prince's Park by drawing a giant penis on it. He did it as a protest against feminism. He got a fine and a community corrections order, though he breached that, so he's been in prison for a large part of this year. He's due to be released next week. He is facing, the reason he was sent to prison is because he's facing drug possession charges.
All right, of course.
Yeah, but if he gets out next week, we are planning to have him on the Uncuckables, so we'll get his side of the story. Neil is his, what is it, legal, Senator Slayer is his legal advisor, is Mackenzie's friend, so...
I've got another question here from Oregon for Tim. Can Tim please say... Jacinda, please, please, please.
Jacinta.
No. Jacinda.
Jacinda.
There we go. He's done it. Mm. All right. I think the English people in the chat, the New Zealand side will be very happy with you. Very pleased, Tim. Because in the better part of a year now that we've been doing this show, you have. I believe never once pronounced Jacinda correctly.
Well, she's not my prime minister.
Lucky you.
So your last opportunity to send through a super chat. We might finish off because, well, the campaign seems to have kicked off. So I'll ask you how your candidacy is going.
Thank you. That's actually something I should have plugged earlier on as well when we were talking about policy. But I actually just came back before the show from doing being a human hoarding. So helped out with my the New Conservative Party deputy leader, Elliot Ikele, and his team out not too far from here, standing at an intersection, waving all of the signs. Overall good reception. I think we had only like 3 people yell at us through their car windows, but dozens and dozens of people, you know, honking, smiling, waving out windows. So it's quite a good uplifting exercise, actually. I really enjoyed it. We had lots of people from the team out there. And, you know, at least it's nice to be able to be back out in public, even though we still can't have public meetings, basically, because we're limited to 10 people. But we can get out and sort of, you know, be visible, which is nice. What we are seeing is a lot of attacks. Billboard vandalism is up and continues to go up. Even in my area, I've had the first billboards vandalized now. We had somebody slashed while staking out vandals. He managed to catch one in the act, took an injury last week, and found out that after 8 p.m. there are only 3 police stations open in Auckland. I believe I talked about this last week, perhaps.
Yes. Or has there been more?
No, sir. And then you follow up on that. We had we've had various other accusations, so various hit pieces against like a Napier candidate now. They had a media hit piece claiming that she was pretending to be a cancer society ambassador, which actually she is, and a cancer survivor. And they've written an entire hit piece on her about how she's, random... sort of anonymous accusations from somebody in the community, and all of this garbage, and then they append, you know, weird caricatures of New Conservative Party policy to the end of it. So the media, definitely the hit jobs, they keep coming, the hit pieces, the vandalism, the accusations, people knocking on doors in the middle of the night. For instance, I had one of our candidates say that they heard, you know, somebody knocked on their door in the middle of the night, and you know, obviously there was nobody there, and then they went out and found that several signs were vandalized, things like that. So definitely the far left is being driven crazy by our campaign, so that's at least good, and we're getting I think overall mostly positive reaction from people, which is nice.
Well, despite the state disaster here in Victoria. The local government elections here are proceeding as scheduled. So you'll be sent. It's always done by mail-in voting. The local government elections. You'll start to get your ballots in early October. It is compulsory to vote in local government elections in Victoria. On my next episode of Wilms Front, which will be just the weekly edition next Wednesday, I've got City of Greater Dandenong Liberal Councillor Timothy Dark as my guest. Obviously, Dandenong is at the moment very safe Labor area, but as I reported on this show a couple of weeks back, we're seeing the local Muslims in that area revolt against the lockdown and dictator Dan. So as a local councillor there, I'll also be interested to hear from Timothy about sort of the state of the community there as well.
Oh, very good. I just remembered one quick update on the case of the supporter who was attacked while apprehending a vandal. The police got in touch with him saying that they wouldn't press any assault charges, even though this had been an assault and this was downplayed as minor assault. And they said, "Oh, we will not be pushing charges because the offender is an ethnic minority and this is his first offence. So we don't press charges against people." Of certain ethnic groups, basically. That was it, unless it was a more serious crime. So that was nice to know, I suppose, that you can get away with certain crimes depending on if you belong to the right group of people. And the final little close here, since we are at the end of... since it is 9/11 today, we talked about that at the beginning of the show. I did realize we should point out that the city of Christchurch has actually decided to celebrate 9/11 by installing anti-terror bollards along the main road. So they have.
We've got the. We call them diversity bollards in Melbourne, right, because we've had three car ram attacks in the Melbourne CBD. That happened in Daniel Andrews's first term. The car attack and bomb happened during the election campaign, and Daniel Andrews still won in a landslide.
Yeah, so that's end of that. And yeah, that's it for this week. I think I've got somebody here asking me for a court case update, but I did do one recently, and we have run out of time. I will try and do another one next week or so. We've got some updates. I have promised to do a proper court case update, but things are going well. Obviously, COVID-19 seems to slow everything down. It's like the ultimate excuse for not getting anything. Sorry, guys, COVID-19, we're just a bit behind.
Yeah.
So, yep, that's it. Yeah, thank you for tuning in this week. As always, you can find my stuff on rightminds.nz, although there's probably not much more going to be on there until after the election, which is on October 17th. Mm. And obviously watch Tim's shows next week, and then we will be back on Friday because for most likely public meetings and everything still
we'll still be in lockdown.
Exactly. Even though it's possible we might be above the 10-person limit, it's not super likely, and if it is, I don't think very many people are going to be organizing meetings last minute, and even then they could be cancelled at any time. So come back to the show and have a good week, and as always, stay safe and stay free.
And stay sane as well. That's what I'm telling my audience now. Of course, unshackled.net still publishing regular written content there. Lucas Roses, he's also covering the local government elections in Victoria, making sure that you're aware who the socialist candidates are so you don't accidentally vote for them. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.